Buddha didn't have a single insight technique or a single tranquility technique for that matter. He would talk most about the breath as an object of meditation. Of all the various topics he taught, that was the one he taught in the most detail. But even that is pretty sketchy. You start out by being aware of long breaths and short breaths, then being aware of the whole body as you breathe in, breathe out, and then you try to calm bodily fabrication. Nobody lists the steps, he doesn't explain them very much, but the images he gives of the state of mind you're trying to attain, a state of a good, strong concentration, being aware of the long breaths and short breaths, but seem to be indicated that it seemed to indicate that you're trying to find a way of breathing that feels good, feels comfortable, gives a sense of refreshment, a sense of ease, pleasure, because that's the state you're trying to develop. And then he talks about being aware of the whole body breathing in, the whole body breathing out. That relates to the fact that you're trying to be aware of the whole body, and when that sense of ease and refreshment arises, you want to spread it throughout the whole body. And then as he explains elsewhere, calming bodily fabrication means that the breath gets more and more subtle. Now, you don't try to suppress it. If you try to suppress it, it gets very uncomfortable. And then you're spreading dis-ease and disrefreshment around the body. Basically, when there's a sense of ease and refreshment, the sense of fullness comes. When you're feeling full of breath energy, good breath energy, then the need to breathe in and out gets less. And you only remember that when you talk about breath, the Buddha doesn't class it as a tactile sensation. He classes it as part of the form of the body, part of the wind element, which you feel inside the body, which permeates the whole body. So the breath comes from within. So as the breath gets more gentle, more subtle, you hold in mind that perception that the breath originates from inside. So you don't feel so much the need to pull it in from outside. You let it radiate from within. And as good breath energy fills the body, the need to breathe in and out gets less. Of course, the mind settles down as the brain is using less oxygen. Whatever physical triggers there are that would cause you to breathe in are not being set off. So you're not being starved of the breath when the breath stops. Breath energy is still there, but the in and out breath goes calm. Just those four steps can take you all the way to the fourth jhana. But again, there's a lot to those four steps that you have to learn to fill in for yourself. And the Buddha recommends that if you have trouble, you go ask someone who's good at concentration. Ask them, how can the mind be made to settle in? In other words, how can it let go of whatever hindrances are disturbing it? How can it be unified with this sense of the body and the mind become one? How can it be concentrated when it's fully focused? You learn from the techniques that other people have tried and found successful. And then you learn to observe on your own what works for you. So there's a lot of room for your experimentation. And of course, you're developing your powers of awareness, powers of observation. This is precisely what you need in order to become discerning. There's no foolproof method for giving rise to insight, because if there were, then even fools could gain insight and still be foolish. You have to practice getting more and more discerning, asking the right questions, exploring, trying things out, so that your concentration becomes your concentration, not somebody else's idea of what concentration should be imposed on your mind. The same applies to insight. The Buddha never taught any one insight technique. As he taught, there are lots of different ways you can contemplate what's going on in the mind. Just with the word fabrication, that's the central issue in insight. You've got the five aggregates, all of which are said to be fabricated. You've got the fourth aggregate, which is fabrication itself, which plays a role in shaping all the other aggregates too. Or you can talk in terms of the three fabrications: bodily fabrication, the in and out breath; verbal fabrication, directed thought and evaluation, how you talk to yourself; or mental fabrication, the perceptions you hold in mind, the images or words that have meaning in the mind, plus feelings, feeling tones of pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain. The whole point of insight is to separate yourself out from them. When you can see these things as separate, the Buddha said, that's when you have insight. This goes against what we hear so much about getting wisdom of oneness or non-duality. Before we get to really good, solid states of oneness, we have to learn how to separate ourselves out from the things that disturb the concentration. Here the questions are, how do you regard fabrications? How do you investigate them? How do you see them with insight? So regarding them as fabrications, it's basically that, seeing them as events in the mind. Doubts come into the mind. Restless thoughts come into the mind. Lustful thoughts come into the mind. And we tend to just jump into them. They become little becomings. There's a world there, there's something you want in that world, and you go into it. It's because you go into it that you can't see it clearly. I learned how to step back and just say, well, this is an event. It may be a thought about the past or a thought about the future, but it is a thought happening in the present moment. That's the first thing you want to see. That's how you regard these things, just as events. Think of the Buddha and his statement of how he got onto the path, when he would divide his thoughts into two types: those imbued with sensuality, ill will, harmfulness; and those imbued with renunciation, non-ill will, harmlessness. Now to do that, he had to step out of his thoughts. Observe from the outside, what psychologists like to call metacognition, observing the processes of the mind. So it requires stepping back, separating yourself out. And you can do that through an act of will. And that's the beginning. Then there comes the investigation. You want to see, why is it that the mind will slip back in? Those worries you may have. The mind can tell itself there's really a lot to worry about. Simply the fact that you've got a body in this world. As the Buddha points out, you're subject to all kinds of mistreatment, the potential for mistreatment. And so you can give yourself lots of good reasons for being worried. But what does the worry accomplish? So you ask yourself, what's the allure? With thoughts of worry, it's usually the sense that if you worry enough, you're being responsible. You're doing what has to be done to prepare. We've got to argue with that. This too is part of the investigation. Is it true that by worrying a lot is going to prepare you? Most of the time, no. In fact, you're better prepared for the future if you develop your powers of mindfulness, concentration, discernment. So the investigation requires a kind of dialogue inside. As you ask questions, see how the mind responds. Or sometimes just pose a question in your mind and try to watch when the mind goes again for a thought, any of the hindrances, for lust or ill will or whatever. What triggered it? Now some of the triggers are outside, but the really important ones are inside. There's something in the mind that says it's worth going for. This is where, when you've seen the allure, you also want to look for the drawbacks. This gets to the third step, how they should be seen with discernment, or seen with insight. You see that if you go for these thoughts, they're going to have this drawback. And you really want to take that seriously. So it's a back and forth, looking for the allure, and then doing what you can to counteract that allure. And again, there's no one insight technique that's going to do this for you. We all know that the three perceptions are kind of the fallback. You see that something is inconstant, it's stressful. If it's inconstant and stressful, it's not worth claiming as you or yours. That's how you can employ the standard way of looking for drawbacks. But sometimes that doesn't seem to really hit home. So you have to look carefully. Do a lot of observing on your own. And again, this is how you develop discernment. If you could do it just by rote, it wouldn't be very discerning at all. It'd be like a factory process. But the mind is not a factory. And your attachment to things, even though there's a common denominator in all attachment, the particulars of your attachments are going to be yours. Think about that statement that a John Mun made to a John Furung one time. That we people are all alike, but then we're different. When you come down to it, we're all alike. We're all alike in that we have the same basic problems. We're different in the particulars of those problems, and the particulars of the techniques are going to work for us. Now the techniques do fall again into some standard patterns. But how you investigate inconstancy, how you investigate the stress, and how you investigate this whole question of not self, that's going to be yours. Because you're dealing with your problems. You're not dealing with generic problems. You're dealing with your problems. So you learn how to take the Buddha's general remarks about the kinds of questions you should ask. And you learn to tailor them for your own particular problems. This is going to take time, which is why you have to be patient and not get frustrated. All the ajahns talk about how you have to go back and forth between letting the mind rest, so gain some strength, and then you go back to asking questions. And then when the questions start getting fuzzier and fuzzier, the answers get less and less precise, you've got to just drop the issue and come back, rest again. It's like working at any job. If you just do nothing but work, 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 you run out of energy. So even though it may seem to be a waste of time to rest. You need it. So when the time comes to rest, rest fully. As for any questions that come up about defilements in the mind at that point, you say, not now. And be strict with yourself. But again, this requires that you be observant as to how much energy you have, how much you have to rest, how far you can go before you have to rest again. This is what it all comes down to. Learn to be observant. Learn to see things as separate. And your sense of separation will grow until finally, as the Buddha said, there comes a point where you're totally disjoined from the events of the mind. That's the mind of an arahant, aware not only defilements and being disjoined from them, but even meditating, focusing on the body, feelings, mind states, mental qualities, disjoined from them, not in the sense of being alienated, but simply in the sense of no longer feeding on them, and no longer needing any need to feed. So learn how to step back, step back, step back. And when the time comes to get into concentration, go plunge into the concentration. Gain the strength you need and step back again. John Fuang's image of the practices of being both the teacher and the student. You're training your inner teacher to run this process in a wise way. It's more like being a student teacher. You try teaching the students and then you learn what works and what doesn't work. Until you solve this problem, why is it the mind wants nothing but happiness but keeps on doing things that cause suffering? When that problem is solved, then you can really rest.